we go. Okay, so joining me for another one of our In Conversation pieces is a City defender who was a legend. He was only here on the playing side 2 or 3 years, but he certainly made his mark. Sean Taylor. Sean, you're looking fit and well. You look like you could still be playing.
I'm not so sure I could do that, though, David. But no, I do feel well, whatever, in myself. And touch wood, obviously, that will continue.
Excellent, excellent. Well, look, let's go back through your career. And you were a somewhat late starter in footballing terms. You didn't make it professionally until the age of 23 in 1986. I see you were at St Blasey. Were you there when Nigel Martin was there at all, or did you miss him?
Probably he missed me. You'll find he's probably a little bit younger than me. So I was there before him at St Blasey. So, I mean, obviously, people always mention that about that. But no, I was probably way before Nigel obviously came to St Blasey, because I went from St Blasey then to Biddeford Town, who were obviously probably in this area, probably one of the biggest clubs around. And then the irony of there was that obviously with a few obviously financial difficulties, they cancelled my contract. And ironically, the next day, Exeter City called me and asked if I'd come sort of on a month's trial first, really.
Yeah. Had you had any trials with any football league clubs at all, or not really?
Yeah, I had a few. I mean, I had one before that. Ironically, I had some trials when I actually was Exeter. I went to Ipswich and I went to Norwich when I was actually with Exeter. And probably the manager at the time, you'll probably know him well, was obviously Terry Cooper.
Of course, so, yeah.
But going back to the scenario there is a case where... Sorry, what was the question again, David? Sorry.
The question was, how did you come to join Exeter? But had you been with any previous clubs before as a youngster on trial?
Well, as a youth, I was born and bred in Plymouth. And I obviously was a youth player there. And when obviously the time to get an apprenticeship, I wasn't offered one. So like anything at the time, my dad said, what are you going to do? And he was a fireman at the time, but before that he was in the dockyard, a shipwright. He said, I think you need to get a trade. So became a plumber. And in between that, then played for St. Blasey, as you said, rightly, and then played for Biddeford. So I was still self-employed when I joined Exeter City, but obviously a decision was made that it was, well, I wanted to be a professional footballer. And at the time I was not married. I was single, so it was a no-brainer for me, really, David.
Excellent. And it was Terry Cooper that gave you your break and was manager when Exeter won the fourth division championship in 89-90, yeah?
No, 86. Colin Appleton was the manager then.
Okay.
So he signed me. I mean, there was a lot of interest in me at the time then, whatever, but I did sign for Exeter in 86, and Colin Appleton was the manager. And then when Colin left, that's what I believe, then Terry came onto the scene.
Yeah, but Terry was the gaffer when you got promoted that time, yeah?
For sure. Like I say, very good times. Enjoyed, obviously, I know Bristol Rovers and Bristol City know him very well, and I know he was well thought of, in Bristol.
Yeah, and did what was the biggest transformation you found between the sort of semi-pro of Biddeford and Exeter? I mean, were you still plumbing in your spare time when you weren't training, sort of thing, keep your hand in?
I mean, to be fair, I was only offered initially like a month's trial or whatever. So I had obviously think about if it didn't go well, then I would go back to my tools. So the scenario was I came in and played a few games, whether they liked what I saw. And then I almost signed an 18-month contract. So then I had to make the decision, which was an easy decision for me, really, was obviously to down tools and become a professional footballer. And then going back to your question, I mean, I felt as a non-league player, I was pretty fit, whatever, but I think I noticed that even the first week in training, how well short I was in fitness and all that, and how appreciating as you go along, how I needed obviously build up my fitness, being I thought as a non-league player, I was probably fit enough, whatever, but By no scale was I, and obviously over time, and I think I remember my debut against Wolves at Molineux in the Christmas. We drew 2-2. I come up, finish the game, come on to the change room. I thought I'm not sure I'm gonna last this, whatever. Ironically, that was so many years ago, whatever. But that the intenseness, obviously, at the time, I think you'll find at Wolves, Steve Bull and Andy Mutch
were playing. Yeah, because they were down in that division then, weren't they? Yeah.
They were. Yeah. And I played against them. Like I say, not that I never wish I was going to give it a go, whatever. Just I cannot believe like everything about it, whatever. And like I say, that ironically, that was many moons ago, whatever. But like yeah. I say, it was a probably a baptism of fire, whatever. I didn't know till near earlier in the day, whatever, which is a good thing. And then things happened from there, really, David.
They did. And then you caught the attention of Swindon Town. So who brought you into Swindon back then, which was in the summer of 91, I think. Yeah, Swindon Town. Who brought you there?
Glenn Hoddle was the manager at the time. So
Glenn Hoddle. So the coach in yes. Glenn Hoddle went out and said, I need an artisan defender, yes? Not to put it
well, mildly, is that? It did. I think he needed someone in a different blend to him. I think you'll get that, whatever. I mean, the assistant manager at the time, people would know him, was John Gorman, who his claim to fame was Glenn, John, come and watch me play at Exeter numerous times, whatever. And obviously reported back to Glenn Hoddle, whatever. And I think they were looking for, as you politely said, a more rugged defender. And I think John said, I fit the bill. So it is. He always say, obviously, I don't think Glenn actually come and watch me play, but John was the assistant manager, and obviously went on his whim, whatever, and it all happened from there, whatever. But I mean, I know we'll be talking later, but it was a baptism fire. It was again, as I was saying, from joining non-league to Exeter, it was a no-brainer from joining Exeter to Swindon, and I think people at Exeter understand I'd done my time there, done my service there, and looking for the next step in football, really.
And it was time to do it. And that season, the season after you joined them, the second yes. season, 92-93, you got promoted, yeah, and you scored 13 goals. Now, City fans will say they've not had a free-scoring centre-half since Aidan Flint left.
No, exactly, no.
You know, was that mainly set pieces that you were scoring from that year you went up?
I would almost say they were majority, not all of them, but majority were set plays. I mean, all my goals, I would have thought, and ironically, the majority of my goals were scored with my head, which probably people will probably thought, well, that would be the case anyway. But I did score a few with my feet, whatever. But majority of my goals for all clubs were mainly with my head.
And looking at some of the members of that side that got promoted, Fraser Digby in goal, I guess your central defensive partner was Colin Calderwood, is that right?
That's right.
You had, obviously, Glenn pulling all the strings in midfield, and then...
It was the sweeper. We played three centre-halves, wing-backs, we played 3-5-2, but a lot of the time we played... This may sound strange, but not strange. He used to play in front of us, if you understand. We played three at the back. He was relying on myself and Colin to do the more aggressive work and all that. But he would, I think everyone knows his ability then. He could still play whatever. It's the old adage, he needed us as much as we needed him, whatever. But obviously, we would obviously win the ball. He would obviously set from defence to attack in one pass.
Yeah. What do you think got little old Swindon promoted? Because it was to the Premiership. What was it about the Swindon side at that time that they had that, dare I say it, Bristol City all this time later, well, not for 40 years, haven't been able to get there? What, if you look back, what made that side tick?
I think, on me personally, was obviously how well and how good a coach Glenn Hoddle was. I mean, he had a blend. I mean, it was only a couple of, I think me, Dave, he signed Dave Mitchell, a lad, an Australian, ironically, but obviously played for Millwall and Rangers and played for teams in abroad, whatever. He came in and played centre forward. He had the players there. It was like Colin was already there, Fraser Digby was over, David Kerslake, Ross McLaren.
Maskell and Steve.
Maskell, Craig Maskell. Yeah, so he brought in, I think, looks like me, Craig and Dave Mitchell. And then obviously Martin Ling came in. People that obviously I've kept in touch with now, whatever. But we had a good blend, very much attacking. That's why I think he was relying on. We played 3-5-2. He pushed, like you see, lots of teams now push the wing backs on, whatever. We if you all see our records, we score lots of goals, but also we probably did concede a lot, but that's the way we played. We felt we could score more goals than the opposition.
And I know he bought, was it Mickey Hazard came in right towards the end of that season then, didn't he? Is that right? Or was he signed in the summer?
It was, I think, I'm sure he was already there when I was there. He didn't play that many games, but obviously it was quite influential. And I think Glenn signed him from Tottenham, whatever. So yeah. I'm not sure. I'm trying to bear that. I'm for sure, I don't think, did he play? I don't think he played in that final, did he?
No, he didn't, not in the final. No, I just noticed him in the pictures there. But talking about the final, I mean, I watched the 7-minute clips of that. I'm guessing that was your first appearance at Wembley. Yeah. 3-0 up. You got the third. Tell us about that day, because you must have been, what, brown shorts time when you were 3-3. Take us through the game.
I think for any ones who'd be a footballer or whatever, I had a few goals which you probably needed to. And first of all was to be a professional footballer, which I managed to do. Next time was obviously to play at Wembley. Next one was to score at Wembley. And then the ultimate thing was to play in the Premiership. And ironically, I probably did three of those things in one day. Yeah. So it was just a fantastic experience. I mean, you said the 7-minute clip. I've seen bits over the past and the goals, and obviously I got two boys who obviously give me clips that other people say, and obviously I'm in a different environment now, but obviously people say, oh, can't believe you played at Wembley and all things like that. And it was just a fantastic, you always think the pitch is big on the TV. You go there and it's not as big as you think, whatever, on the pitch, but and like the atmosphere, it was ironic. Obviously, we went 1-0 up, I think with Glenn Hoddle, Glenn scored, made it 1-0 halftime. Then Craig Maskell made it 2. And every time we scored, all you could hear was the Swindon Town fans. So then, ironically, the third goal, I've scored.
I saw that third goal because you were in quite a forward position for that, weren't you?
Well,
you
know? it was from a corner. What happened, it was a corner. The ball got headed out. And then the ball, I think John Moncur played the ball back in.
And you hadn't started running back, had you?
Well, no, because I was anticipating, hopefully, that would be another opportunity. And there was the opportunity was, the ball was in between the goalkeeper and myself, whatever. And I have got a picture at home where you see me actually, you don't actually see my head. You just see the goalkeeper and the ball, but not see me, because you'll see the incident. There was someone took a picture and you can't really see my head, whatever, because I'm in between the ball and the goalkeeper, whatever. And fortunately, obviously, a little bit got there just before the goalkeeper and made it 3-0. And like I say, all the time you just heard the Swindon Town fans.
You did. I thought you did a touch of the Alan Shearers with that goal celebration, because you had nearly a headband there and you were coming out like this. And
that was my. I don't think he took it off me or I took it off him. Whatever. You'll see now. But no. But the irony of it is that we were all 3 up, and then they came back as people know, or maybe not know, 3-1. And when they scored, I know our supporters were shouting, but all you could hear was the Leicester City fans.
It was
quite an irony. I don't know. Obviously, our fans were cheering us to get back into the game, whatever. But, I mean, then they scored the second to make it 3-2, 3-0. My only thing on that was there was another 15 minutes to go. And they had put so much effort in, obviously, coming back from 3-0 down to 3-0. If you do, obviously, watch the game or people see it through, we probably had 2 or 3 very good chances after that, where they had probably give their all to get back in the game. And then the irony is, which we will realise if they all know Steve White, he's known for diving in the box, but the referee gave the penalty on Paul Bowden.
So a lot on Paul Bowden's shoulders, though, to go for a penalty, wasn't it?
He missed one for Wales previously to get them into the Euros or something like that, whatever. So it was a massive, massive thing for him, whatever. But I mean, if you see that, obviously I scored 3 that season, 13, sorry. I think he scored something like maybe 11, 12. I think 11 of them were penalties, I think.
Yeah, which from a defender, well, if they're penalties, then that's it. So you've got promoted, you've achieved your goal, and you got there by 30. Some players, you know, you did it. You condensed it all very quickly. In the summer, Glenn goes off to Chelsea. And John was put in charge. Do you think, and John's a lovely bloke, I've met him a few times over the years. Do you think that was a mistake letting him run with it. And the club didn't have a lot of money because the only person they went out and bought was Jan Agafjotov, whose start wasn't particularly great, although he did get
at the time, he did goals.
Do you think they got it wrong that summer when Glenn went?
I think it was easy to say got it wrong. I mean, like, around that time, the teams that were getting promoted didn't normally last. They normally lasted one season. They like the derbies and all that. They go up for one season and come down. And I think, we didn't have the right infrastructure to go for it. I think the club absolutely loved, and everybody took it on board that we were going to be in the Premiership. I think at the time, you'll find also we lost Colin Calderwood to Tottenham. We lost very key players who left, whatever. And we didn't, and that's no to the people that came in, we didn't replace them with better players, maybe on par or maybe low, but with the financial difficulties that clubs did have, it was a case where it was, like anyone says, it was late. We didn't finish the season till late. Organisation. It was always thought that, obviously, when Glenn left, John was going to leave as well. But I think the directors enticed or encouraged John to take it. I think if you're in John's shoes and you wanted to be in charge, I think he made that decision. And we totally backed him. The thing is, he was, like you just said, he was very instrumental in getting me to Swindon. He looked after me. And though people may know Glenn, whatever, we all could talk to him and all that, he was a massive, that focal point between the manager and the players, whatever. Everything, a lot of things that maybe didn't go right, never got to the manager. John would deal with them. And that's how good a job he did in our, obviously, promotion. Now, the scenario is then, he's now the manager. And like you hear these stories before, it's not easy. And like I say, he didn't have, I don't think, the money to obviously make us competitive, but I know for sure that we all tried our best to do well that season, we didn't know what our fortunes were going to be, but we knew that we'd give ourselves a chance. And a lot of us took the opportunity because we're playing the Premiership. Really.
Yeah, and it lived up to your expectations. I mean, what was it like running out at Old Trafford and Highbury, Stamford Bridge, everywhere?
Oh, it was, I think it was a dream come true, really. Like I said, I did everything that I wanted to do in one game at Wembley. Now, to play in the Premiership, and it was only going, Sky was only going the season before, so you see the things on the TV, you know you're going to be televised, and it was so much of a euphoria, and everything was going, like it is now, it's still a massive tournament. Obviously, everybody wants to play be in the Premiership, and It was fantastic. Doing everything that I wanted to do, playing against players that I would never dream of playing. I am a Man United fan, whatever, though I do support the teams I played for. It was just like you say, playing at Old Trafford, and it was incredible. It went so quickly, but though we got relegated, I know everyone says in the worst scenario we conceded 100 goals. I was talking to my two sons in the week about that, whatever. It's a case, because beyond that, we had one game to go, we're Leeds at home, and we were 95 goals. And I said, we can't concede 5 goals and get 100 goals. Well, ironically, we lost 5-0, I think, or 5-1.
Oh, dear.
And got 100 goals. But I think we drew, I know it's easy to say, it was 2 points for a win and 1 for a draw. We drew 15. Now, easy to say, if we had won 5 of those, we would have stayed up. But anybody... Yeah.
But it was the experience. It was the experience, and they didn't have the money to buy themselves out of trouble or anything like that. Yeah, but
I think if you go there, people talk. They enjoyed. I think we enjoyed the experience, but I think the fans enjoyed it even more. I mean, every home game was a follows.
Yeah, that second relegation that followed fairly quickly afterwards. That second relegation. That followed fairly quickly afterwards. Yeah. Was that a reaction to being in the Premier League, do you think?
Quite possibly. I think it's happened in the past to teams, hasn't it, in the past. And yes, I mean, it was easy to say we were too good to go down, because ironically, we then bounced up the following year quite quickly under Steve McMahon at the time, whatever. So
that's right. I mean, what a difference in character, though. I mean, if you look at the managers that you played under, Terry Cooper, we all know what Terry's like. the cultured Glenn Hoddle, the genial, I'll say genial John Gorman, and then Steve McMahon. I mean, What was he like to play under?
I mean, he liked obviously to perform. His teams were quite aggressive, but I mean, obviously his background with Liverpool and all that. I mean, he was a player manager at the time, whatever, and then he stepped aside and was a manager. I mean, it was good and bad. Like I said before, we had the season we went. I don't think whether he took us down or, but then we had such a good players. We like Kevin Horlock, the likes of people like that. We were always going to come up again, and so we had a good side, and we were destined to come up into the next division.
Yeah. So anyway, the summer of 96, well, in fact, it was September 96 you yes. came to Bristol City. So they played a number of games. Joe Jordan was manager. How did the move to City come about in that September? Because it wasn't a close season signing. So what happened there? Because City were in League One. You were back in what is now the Championship.
Right. Well, the scenario there, a little bit, at the end, I think my face didn't fit in the end with the manager. The situation was I had another 12 months to go. We went on pre-season and I was sort of like thought I was going to be offered another contract. I wasn't. But like I said, I still had 12 months to go. And I think probably the time I wanted to play football, it seemed that the writing was on the wall that I wasn't going to play many games for Swindon and Steve. And respected his, but also he needed to respect me that I was at age where I needed to be playing football, and I wasn't going to, without doubt, was not going to see my last year sitting in reserves and being a sub and things like that. So whether I didn't really initiate it. I mean, I think it was a club. Well, and I was really pleased when Bristol City obviously came in, whatever. And I didn't hesitate reason because I knew that I was going to another club who wanted me. Maybe no respect to that. I know that I got on really well with the fans at Swindon. I was actually leaving. Who someone wasn't going to play me, so it was a no brainer really. I was going to go somewhere where I was wanted and was going to play, and like it suited me fine, and being a West Country boy as well, it was just then
you were going to the premier club in the West Country, even though they've never, as we speak, got to the Premier League.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the lineup that City had at the start of that season, because, I mean, in the team then, I mean, Keith Welsh was vying for the goalkeeping spot with Naylor. We're looking at their central defenders. I think Rob Edwards started as number five. Then
that's right.
Mark Shale. Then they had Jason Cundy on loan.
I played him at Shrewsbury.
You played one game alongside him, looking at this here. So
that's right.
So Jason Cundy was in there.
At Shrewsbury, I think. No, at Shrewsbury I played.
That was your first game away at Shrewsbury, that's right. And Taylor and Cundy, the central, and you had people like, Gary Hours, who obviously I'm guessing that's you're still friendly with Gary.
Yes.
Martin Cool was there. Darren Barnard, he was a good little fullback in his day. Lewis was there as well.
He was coming in, obviously playing right back, and then to be fair, that all changed because then when he come in, played with me at centre half.
That's right. And then the rest of that season, it was you were there or thereabouts.
We are.
But then you got injured just before John Ward came on board. So what are your recollections of 96, 97 prior to that injury? Because you got injured, I think I've got it down here in March. Literally, it must have been a couple of weeks before John Ward came on board.
That's right. It was a case. I can't even think of the injury or whatever, but I know we finished fifth innings. Did we lose to Brentford in the playoffs?
You lost to Brentford in the playoffs that season. John came in, he lost his first game, won five in a row, and then disappointingly lost at Wickham. I was at that game, and that was typical City. Because if they'd have got a point or won it, they would have had home advantage, because as it was home away rather than away at home against Brentford. But you were ruled out for the season, weren't you?
Well, for that rest of that season, I mean, I checked I got the Rothmans, and I do check, and I don't honestly know, David, what injury I had for them to be out of the other side, which is not, so I know it's such a long time ago, or whatever, but I thought I did play in the playoff game.
You played in the second leg alongside Mark Shale. There we go. You played in the second leg up there.
Yeah.
That's it.
But I think maybe I was still probably still carrying an injury and things like that, whatever. So that was quite disappointing because Bristol City have always been on the verges of getting promotion on that. And then obviously, well, that they didn't get there, did we?
We didn't. But then the start of the big season, 97-98, City had gone out. Did they sign? They signed Sean Dyche.
And then he got injured, didn't he?
That was on the back of what he'd done for Chesterfield, getting to the semi-final.
Chesterfield, that's right, yeah.
But he got injured early on, didn't he?
And I think that's when you'll find, well, like I think probably other people will say maybe not, I think that's when we decided for Lewis to come and play alongside me at the back. Is that right?
That's right, yeah, no, because Dyche wasn't, because they didn't have the transfer window didn't appear to be as early in December, because Dyche came in after about 8 games. That was his debut. He played 10 games. He was out again. And then you've got, Taylor and Carey. So, that was the defensive partnership. But what are your recollections of the individuals of that side? I'm looking through the lineup here. I mean, Keith Welsh was an ever-present bar two games. Good character, confident in him as a...
Very confident, yeah. Very dry sense of humor, being a northern chap and all that. But no, I think we all had a good blend of characters, and I know we're going to talk about the team, like in youth and all that. I mean, we had Tommy Doherty, like Lewis. I think we had Matty Hewlett, people like that. So we had and then we had the nucleus of, like I say, those are the younger ones, and then we had the older ones like Gary and Brian Tinney.
Yeah, Tins was there.
So we had we had Sean Golder up front as well, whatever. But we had it's easy to say that, a nucleus of a team, but of all, we had some good youth, and also we had good experience, and that's a good cocktail for getting obviously promotion, I think.
And looking at some of the other players in there, again, I'll say an unsung hero of that squad, Adam Locke at right back. He was he was good.
It was consistent,
solid bloke.
It was. I think he almost come as a midfield player, because then don't forget, and Lewis then come and played alongside myself, whatever. So he slotted in there and then nicely, then we had him. Was it Nick? Obviously, Mickey on the left-hand side.
Well, Mickey and 10 goals from Mickey Bell that season, wasn't it, from fullback?
Well, we always had a good left side, but to be fair, they complement each other really well, Mickey and Brian. And obviously, everybody, we always seen to go down, without no respect to the other side, we always seen to go down the left-hand side, and everybody would all then start getting excited. And obviously, a lot of things developed from that side, to be fair.
Yeah. Do you think that losing Sean Goater, as it was at the end of March, was a different, notwithstanding your own injury, but losing Sean's goals when, you had about 6 or 7 games to go, was he out of contract? Could he have been kept on? Was that what it was, just about getting the money rather than the championship?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Sean will tell you what the scenario is there. I think losing a key striker in that situation, We ironically, going back to Swindon, we did that before when I remember a lad called Duncan Shearer for Swindon.
Yeah, Duncan Shearer, yeah.
We had him, whatever. The season before we got into the playoffs, Blackburn came in and bought him, whatever, and we lost his goals. But then, ironically, Blackburn didn't play him at all. So a scenario like that, whatever, with Sean, whatever. I mean, because then he went then to, where did Sean go to Manchester City then?
That's right, yeah, that was his move. Yeah. Feed the goat.
And that was the deadline day, wasn't it? Was that deadline day or no?
I think it must have been, yeah, because one minute he was here against York, he hadn't scored about 5 games looking at this. But, I mean, looking at some of the other players in that team, I mean, Steve Torpy wasn't a bad bloke, really. He wasn't the most mobile, but...
It was one of those where, for a team player and for the team, he was excellent. I don't think always the fans appreciated the hard work, and he did. I think he was a very similar person to when I first joined, like Kevin Nugent, is it?
Yeah, Kevin Nugent, yeah.
Very similar.
Emily, as he was called by the fans, yeah.
Well, those two characters, you'd always have in your team, and I think the players appreciated them probably more sometimes than the fans, because they probably expected them to score more goals and things like that. But they were very key to how we played with build-up and obviously holding the ball up and bringing other players into the game.
Yeah, and another player who was a bit of a character, by all accounts, we're going to try and line him up, was Colin Cram. He looked like he played the game for fun.
Yeah, well, you mentioned about you didn't know what was going to happen there, whatever. A very excitable person, a young chap, wanting to impress. I think we got him down from Scotland, is that right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, And like I say, he scored his fair share of goals, whatever. I mean, he sort of, he figured for a while, and like I say, should have had a better career than he did, whatever. But I'm not sure where he ended up playing after Bristol.
Yeah, but it was, and all through that season, it was pretty much a battle between you and Watford. That's for the championship. Watford. I remember going to Vicarage Road just before Christmas that year, because Watford were in front, and we over that Christmas New Year period, we actually managed to get ahead of them, I think, just looking at this. Yeah. But I think City took 7,000 fans up there, and scored, and then they got an equaliser. But that was a game and a half. And then,
like I say, that was a disappointing thing, thinking like, not say I got the injury when we played Watford. Well, we'll probably talk about it later. But like I say, we're nipping tuck with them all season, and just disappointed that we couldn't actually be champions. But obviously, second was good enough to get into the next division, really.
No, most definitely, most definitely. And I mean, what was the playing camaraderie? What was the camaraderie like amongst the players off the pitch? I mean, was it? Did you sort of work hard and play harder type of thing? Were you all local,
I would say majority of the players were all local. I was still living in Swindon and moved down to Bristol. And I think it was always a key. Wherever I was playing, I wanted to be in and around where the club was, whatever. And I think a lot of people lived in LC, and I lived in, not that I'd made a preference, I just lived in Backwell, just a little bit further than there's someone living on the other side. And I think whether in any club, whatever, the players are going to be in different areas, but for whatever reason, you can obviously say to John Ward, we gelled together. We had, like I say, a good nucleus of experienced players, but then also there were some up-and-coming, very good young players coming in, and we bonded. Well, I think the respect from the younger ones to the older ones, and the need in that we needed the younger legs in the side and all that proved dividends, really.
Yeah, and what was John Ward like as a manager? Because he sort of had a fair few games as manager before coming to City. I mean, was he sort of... Because at the time, he was assisted by Terry Connor, wasn't he?
That's right. They were good format. I mean, obviously, I've followed John's career, and also Terry, who's obviously been playing with Nick McCarthy at clubs. And so they've done very well for themselves. And I think they just gelled well. John was obviously a coach, but obviously Terry did a lot of the coaching, and they worked well together. I think John just wanted us, he had a good nucleus of a team. He just wanted us to play. We like you said before, we trained hard, we played. And I think if you get those ingredients right and you get a bit of luck, you're always going to get, hopefully going to get success at the end of the day.
I had a chat with John literally only about a month ago. And one of the questions I didn't ask him, and I'd be interested to see it from your side, after he lost Sean Gota, he went out and signed Jason Roberts on loan.
Right.
And we all know what career Jason went on to have. And Jason scored, I think, on his debut up at Boundary Park, Oldham. Up at Oldham. And
Oldham, that's right.
And then I think it was an international break.
He went to play for his...
He went to play for his country, playing. And his card was marked after that, wasn't it, yeah?
That's right. And I don't think then he played for us again, did he?
No, he didn't. That was it.
No.
And he could have been more prolific. Whether they'd signed him and Sean McCarthy, I don't know. Right. But, yeah.
I think John at the time probably... Whether he had plans, he knew that Sean Gota was going. I don't know whether that was a board decision or presuming it was probably a more board decision, but as a manager, you want to keep your better players. He probably had to then act pretty quickly to get a replacement. I mean, and the scenario was Jason come in, and like I say, I remember distinctly, obviously, him doing really well at Oldham, and then next minute, find that he'd gone international duty, and then it was never, not say never to be seen again, whatever. And I think there was a lot to ask of Sean to come in at that short time, being obviously with Sean being so successful and needed to come up and running straight away, if you understand.
Yeah, and McCarthy was one of those players that Gota was probably one in two and a half, and McCarthy had always been a one in three, probably. He wasn't, I don't think he was prolific from that point of view. Now, we talked just before we started recording about the Watford injury. And that was, do you remember that pitch? They played American football on it.
Football, all the markings were on there, and the groundsman, what I said, did a terrific job. He then tried to obviously cover all the blue and the red or the white with obviously green paint, whatever. Because I remember people sliding in all different coloured paints on their shorts because we had wore white shorts. And, oh, it was, and going on the pitch, and just thought, well, it's ironic, really. But like I say, no, I do distinctly remember because the markings were quite distinctive on the pitch still.
But then the game, as I say, a combination of losing Sean Gota and then Sean Taylor, you get injured against Watford. Was it a clash? Was it a stretch? Because that was, I think you had a game for a year nearly, wasn't it?
I went up in the air with their goalkeeper, and as I came down, obviously legs connected and all that. Obviously ruptured me ACL at the time. Didn't think nothing of it. I think people realised I was still running around. Went in at half time. Said I'd give it a go. Come out. Didn't felt okay running straight. Whatever. And then at odd times, and felt that I couldn't carry on. And then it. I think I had to wait for a couple of days to let the legs settle, then go and saw a consultant and an X-ray and scan, and it just showed that I'd ruptured my ACL or whatever. And being at, 35. I mean, at the time, people then were getting, it was taking them probably, a lot of people, 9 months, whatever. I knew I only had one chance to come back again, whatever. I took probably, I think about 10, 11 months, whatever. But
well, you were out of it for a fair bit. But I mean, what was the atmosphere like at Ashton Gate during that season? Because I mean, one player who surprised me that he never made it with us was Sean Dyche. Because when he came in, he seemed as if he lost confidence. And when you look at him now, and he's a hard man now as manager. Yeah. He was as a player. Do you watch every game from the sidelines?
Yes, I did, I mean, I was myself very frustrated, whatever. I think we never had that conversation. It's just a case where I think he just tried too hard to be sort of, not in a derogatory thing, the main man. He just wanted, obviously, he was as a centre-half, you want to be, obviously, John made him captain, whatever. It may have been he just probably needed to concentrate on his football, and not saying he didn't think of anything else, because like I say, he's preceded himself with what he's now doing it at Burnley and as a coach and as a manager. It just seemed, as you rightly said, it just didn't happen for him, whatever. It was we got up another level, you could say. We were playing against better players. It's very hard when you're on the sidelines, been out for so long, because though you're with the players, every day you're training on your own. You only like to see them maybe at social events or like on a Saturday night or like during the week, whatever. Most of the time you were concentrating on your own injury and doing so. And I didn't probably see a lot of the training at the time, whatever. So I haven't got the answer for it. I just thought maybe we stepped up a level and it was very difficult. And like I say, we just seemed to be a bit,
we had that season, just like you had with Fjortoft with 13 goals and got relegated. Yeah. We signed Adi Akinbaye, and he
scored
23 goals that season. But it looks to me in the transfer, and I discussed this with John, it looks to me in the transfer activity that he went out, well, City, and he said it wasn't him, because they went out and got Akinbaye, Tony Thorpe, and Søren Andersen.
Yeah? That's right. You're right.
The cover that they got defensively was for you, I guess, was Julian Watts. And maybe they think that you'd be out for as long as they were. And I guess a combination of Watts and a confidence of Sean, not what it was, that contributed, I guess, to the poor start to the season, yeah?
For sure. Because when did then, you would know, I mean, that's why I don't know, when did actually John leave then?
Well, John left, it was, again, we talked about this, I think, he left, he shouldn't have gone, as a board. Oh. He went out and wanted to bring Mick Harford in, didn't he? To give him Ray Harford, to give him assistance. And John, John, and they'd beaten Crewe at home 5-2, and then they beat Bolton at home, and it looked like they were turning it round. Right. Yeah. And then next thing, John said he didn't walk, he was sacked, but they went in and bought Benny. Jeez.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, and then the first two games that Benny had in charge were 5-0 at Bradford, yeah, or whatever it was, and yeah, that's right, and 6-1 at home to Wolves. I mean,
it was a hard feeling there, whatever. That, I think he came in at a very difficult time, and though he had, I will say, he had support from everybody, I think he was sort of like one man on his own, whatever, and it was a massive task. He had a good reputation, obviously, where he was before, whatever, and to come in, I know it's happened for other, but he almost had to come in and like sail the ship himself, whatever. I think it was extremely difficult. He had people behind the scenes who I can honestly say were helping, but then you've got to trust the people that you work with. Because he didn't bring anyone in with him.
Well, that was a question I was going to ask you, because he was more of a coach than,
yes,
than a manager. It was a massive big ask for him to come in. I mean, that was the first manager that you played under. Did yes, he change the way the team trained?
He had good principles, and he had some great sessions, whatever. But then he needed, obviously, as I'd see it, he needed obviously have a pre-season to bring those things into Providence over a season, whatever. And this was like, it was in the season, was it? So it was very difficult, yeah, to implement those things. You almost like, it was very difficult. To me, he needed a pre-season, because we then went on to the fitness and things like that. But going back after that, when Tony came in, Tony was a breath of fresh air to me, whatever, because we were obviously wanting defensively, and I know people being Bristol Rovers as well, he was good for the club because he got us organising, which he's proved in the past.
We talk about Tony in a minute, because I was just checking the records. You played quite a few games that season. Was there any time in the first season back, or the one-off season back in what is now the Championship, that they said, Sean, can you get back a bit earlier? Were you under pressure to get back in?
I think when Benny was in charge, it was a case of coming back sooner rather than later. I think from what I gather, did I play the last?
You came in
last five games, you came six in games
for the last eight games, and you the match you came back was a 2-0 home win against Port Vale, and the player that everybody hoped was gonna help turn it around, not only you coming back, was it David Howes? They signed on loan from Tottenham.
That's right. Oh, that's right. Yeah, yes, right. I remember David. Yeah, he was a nice chap.
And then, but you came in, and did you? I've got here that you missed the last game of the season. Yeah. Was that injury again?
Quite possibly. I think we'd already, because we obviously then were relegated, weren't we?
You were, yeah, no, absolutely. So yeah, relegated. But I mean, that was it a disappointment? I mean, that must have been the penultimate season of your active playing career, and you missed a year. You missed a year.
I managed, well, like I say, got some games under my belt. Like I say, I think it was, they were close games. Like you said about, I played Port Vale on the Saturday, and I think I went to play Portsmouth on the Monday. Was that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, that was like two games in, like, I've been out for like 11 months, whatever. And we obviously got two good results, whatever. And you think, I think it was just a lot more needed to be done, whatever. Like I say, I was concentrating on, and like you say, people say when you break for a long time, you get through the first two games on like know-how and positivity and all that. And over time, I need a decent pre-season then to obviously start the next season, really.
Yeah. Well, the next season starts, and here you are now, 36, because we're talking 99-2000 season. And here you are, in the opening lineup, Tony Pooh has come on board as manager.
Yes.
And as you say, I'm not in the vilification of Tony Pulis camp like most City fans are. And his managerial record since he left us stacks up alongside anybody at Championship and Premier League level. So what did he say
on the stats?
On one more season. Was that what it was?
The case was, I had, I think, another season to go, whatever. And he knew, obviously, I've been injured and all that. And I said, well, if I'm available to play. And he did, I think people got to realise, he did. You have a look at our results, and I know it's a thing about how far back. We were drawing games 0-0, not scoring enough goals, whatever. That was, we were very solid, and people felt like we were not scoring goals at the time. But is that right?
It's interesting, because people say that Pulis played boring football, but I'm I'm looking here, and in the first 5 games, you beat Blackpool. Well, game five, you beat Blackpool 5-2, and then right. In game two, you beat Bournemouth 3-1. That was two home games. Okay, you lost at Reading and lost at Wigan. So I don't know what people were talking about, but let's that Reading game. You were there. Into the crowd. What do you remember?
I was on the pitch, whatever, and I couldn't believe what had happened, whatever, because didn't the girl break her arm or something as well?
I don't know, but she took it full in the face or somewhere.
And I don't think he played again. I don't think.
No, I don't think he did.
No,
yes, he did. Sure. I'm just did reading he? Here. It said Davison and Pulis. This is reading out the history of the club. It proves to be a case of engaging tongue before the brain. They are forced to backtrack from their immediate post-match comments that Lavin would not play for the club again after he got sent off for kicking the ball into the home crowd. But I'm looking here that he played about 3 weeks later. So he did play.
Oh, did he? It just felt like it was like the end was nigh, because obviously that situation, whatever, I mean.
Yeah.
It was definitely a bit of frustration, really.
Yeah, if you look at the team that lined up there, it was much changed even from when you started, because it was Steve Phillips had taken over in goal. What was he like? What was he like as a
teammate? He was
never his fault when he conceded, was it?
No, exactly. No, very much so. I mean, obviously you talk about Stuart Naylor and Keith Welsh, whatever. Obviously, they were older, senior players. He'd come in, obviously, under their sort of the umbrella, whatever. I mean, from what I gather, he did have a very good career, whatever. Just that he was up and coming, and he just needed knocking down a bit at times, whatever. But he proved to be a very, very good goalkeeper, and obviously carried on there, because I think he went then to Crewe and the likes of that.
Oh, he had a good career with us, really. Paul Mortimer in midfield. I mean, that was a bit of a poor man's choice compared to what had gone before, maybe.
A nice person, good footballer, whatever, but probably, like a few of us, whatever, probably are near the end of our careers at the time, possibly.
his knees weren't the greatest either, were they, Paul Mortimer?
Not I'm aware of, no.
And then Greg Goodridge was still around.
He was a character.
Infuriating, because his sort of end product never seemed to justify all the approach.
When I obviously went down to Torquay later in my career as a coach, whatever, Greg played there, whatever. That's where did we sign him from, Torquay?
I don't know. I don't know where he came from. I don't know that.
But he was very, he was up and down. I mean, he was an exceptional, gifted player, whatever. But obviously, it wasn't consistent enough. But he showed some unbelievable skill at times.
Yeah. And as this season progressed, because you played, as I say, I'm looking at the lineups here, you were there into November, but City went out and signed Keith Millen. So was that to him replacing you?
I think so. At the time, I think I was. It's very difficult now to think on those things. I think I was, at the time, I think I'd be training and the injury. And I think around that time, I must have decided to, obviously, I think I hurt, because all that time I was still there, whatever. Because when did Tony leave?
Tony Pulis, he left actually just before the Christmas, wasn't it? Yeah, is that right?
Because then Danny Wilson came, didn't he?
No, Danny came in the summer, because Tony Forthrock was manager for a short period. Yeah,
it was a case
I'm guessing you were on staff.
I was sort of like, it was like myself and Brian and all, and we're helping Tony and things like that. It wasn't going to work like that, whatever. But I think we just had to try and steady the ship at the time. So I think, like I say, that area that time was difficult to think. I mean, I wasn't playing at the time. Then Keith came in, and I got on really well with Keith. We did our coaching badges together.
Yeah.
So we had a quite a good relationship at the club, whatever. So it was a case where, I think then I was hardly playing at all then, I think, because obviously I think Keith played with Lewis quite a bit then, is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I'm looking here. Well, you played in total that season 25 games, which is a decent one. I mean, I'm looking at this and it looks like your last game was just into the new year against Cardiff. Did you know, was there a match when you stepped out and you knew this is my last game, or was it that was my last game and I didn't realise it at the time?
Well, I was trying to refer to when Danny Wilson came in. It was a case where I was then still, I must have still had a playing contract, and it was a situation like a player coach, whatever. And I think like they wanted to give me a go whether I should play, and I played a reserve game, whatever. And in the end, it was total waste of time, whatever. We did it. I don't know what we did. We played at Barnet, and if people remember it, whatever. They were very well imaged on it, whatever. So I think it was, and then I knew that I wasn't up to the. Not in up to the game, obviously playing to a standard I would be happy with, whatever. So sort of like quite sadly, they just petered out a little bit. Not saying I thoroughly enjoyed my time at Bristol playing, and like I say, I ended up being a coach here for another.
You were on the coaching in those years because I interviewed Danny a couple of months ago. Those years under Danny, it was year on year improvement. It was attractive football. What are your recollections of that?
Yeah, I mean, I was then on. I was taking the reserves. Danny and obviously Frank Barlow, who I got a real good understanding with, good friendship, manager and first team coach. And I was sort of like helping them and also taking the reserves and was with them on match days. Thoroughly enjoyed the experience. Obviously, the changed his name so many different times, isn't it? We won that. What the old? I'm trying to think. Not the LDV, was it?
It was 2002.
Was it?
Yeah.
And then I think what the thing was, when we lost the playoff game, didn't we?
We did against Brighton because you lost to Cardiff. Brighton. You lost to Cardiff in the semi the previous year.
Yeah.
Then you got to Wembley, and I said to Danny. It's a question I've been waiting 20 years to ask him.
Yeah.
Leroy Leita in the... Yeah. He wasn't even on the squad. And when we looked at it, and I put that on the podcast...
He
justified his decision not to include him. But you must have seen Leita in the reserves. What a chance.
Yes. Yeah, it was prolific, scored. I mean, I think when you become a coach, right, the manager... He lives in by is you giving him all the information, all the help you need. But in the end, the manager's got to make his own decisions on that. I mean, it was, I just think it was all round. I think we had to be we're quite, as a club, very confident of winning that game. But it, like a lot of things happen, we, as a team, the club, the players did not perform on the day, really. I mean, it wasn't a great entertainment game anyway, was it, from what I can gather?
Oh, God, no. And it was a penalty. Danny Coles
had
it, and sneaky.
It was quite a shame how it ended, like, because obviously, as you said, I totally enjoyed my relationship with the two manager and assistant manager. And you always felt they were going somewhere with it, whatever. But obviously, that was curtailed after that game.
Was it a surprise that he went? Because I think it was to Danny when I spoke with him.
Surprise, but nothing surprises you in football.
but then Brian got the gig, yeah?
That's right.
Brian got the gig, and you were there that first season Brian was in charge, weren't you, yeah?
Well, Brian, obviously, Brian brought Keith Mennon into his assistant manager, and I kept the same position, or as like a sort of like development coach, underneath him, whatever. So I was still there, and I helped Keith a lot. Obviously, Brian was still playing manager.
Yeah, just about. Well, I can remember chatting to Brian once about there was a match against Chesterfield, and I was doing stuff for Club Call, I think, and he took Brian off at a critical part of the game. I said to Brian, "Why did Keith take you off?" And he shrugged his shoulders. And people berate Brian Tinian as a manager, but he missed out on the playoffs in his first game in charge, his first season by one point.
Point.
Just really. 1 point. Yeah. And then everybody remembers, because you've gone by then, but everybody remembers Brian for that 7-1 defeat.
Yeah. Against Swansea. Did at Swansea. Yeah.
About 6 games in the following season.
I think the scenario on that, I have obviously a lot of regard for Brian. It was a case where there was still a nucleus of that team there that Danny had, hadn't it? Through that, that's why I think. Well, it was right or wrong. It was curtailed mainly, like say, as you say, Danny was surprised, but well, rightly so, because we probably had formulated no respect. Like I said before, when I was at Swindon, where we had such a good players, we were never too good to go up again. But obviously, those players got you in the next division, whatever. So
yeah.
Is that period of you either get the job, well, for whatever reason, whatever, but you've got good players, and it's very difficult, like I say. And I think everybody should know, it's not, as everyone does know, it's not very easy being a manager.
When you were there, was it the reserves that you were coaching again, if I may ask?
When Brian came in, manager, it was a case of Keith and myself would like obviously take the training, obviously adhering to Brian. So I was involved quite heavily as a group, because don't forget Brian was playing, so obviously he wouldn't be coaching. So if we had like pre-season especially, we'd have big squads and we'd split the squads down the middle. So we'd be doing the same functional things. And then when we come together to do the old practical things. So I was quite heavily involved in and quite thoroughly enjoyed the coaching, obviously, they're at Bristol City.
Yeah. But you got released in the summer of 2005. It was your good friend and teammate, Gary Howard, said, come to the Forest.
The Forest Green. Well, we had only one thing. We needed to stay in the conference. Obviously, it was the lawn, but not the new lawn, whatever. We were playing on that. If people don't know the lawn, playing on a very slopey pitch in Stroud. No one knows where Forest Green. They do know where it is now, but they didn't know then, whatever.
I didn't know.
and it was a thoroughly enjoyable time there, whatever. Our main first year, with main job was to make sure we're in the conference to go to the new lawn. And the irony was that we did that, went to the new lawn, and to be unlucky for Gary, I feel, he only lasted 5-6 stroke games on the new season at the new lawn.
Yeah.
And obviously Gary was obviously sacked, whatever, and I had no hesitation of staying. No. Obviously I wanted to go as well.
So, looking at good old Wikipedia, I mean, you went to Exeter, then assistant manager at Torquay,
and then
professional development coach with Plymouth,
and then
returned to Torquay.
Went back to Torquay.
That's
right. Thoroughly all that. It's, I mean, I've got all the dates here, whatever, and like, it was a little, and people do know that, or some will know. I mean, when I left Forest Green in 2007, things were, I'd say, quite difficult. The phone doesn't ring, and people don't, and obviously you get acquaintances and friends and all that. I mean, I was sort of like not sure where I was going, still living in Bristol at the time, whatever, doing scouting. Well, ironically, doing scouting for Man City in like 2007, and like watching games, going to games and coming back. But that was enough for what I wanted to do. So in the end, I decided to be self-employed coach and did that and thoroughly enjoyed that. And then we decided to move back down to the West Country in 2008, I think, 2008, 2009. And ironically, met someone walking on the beach who was involved with Exeter and said, oh, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm self-employed coach. And he said, well, would you like to come back to Exeter City? And went back there in 2009 and thoroughly enjoyed that under 18 coach. Being local, it was ideal for me.
Yeah. And then Steve Perriman was involved behind the scenes there, wasn't
he? Yes, he was.
He
was there, Steve Perriman. I mean, at the time, Paul Tisdale was the manager, and I was under 18 coach with Kwame Ampadu, who obviously, well, not say obviously his son Nathan, Ethan, who's obviously at Chelsea now.
Yeah.
But obviously, enjoyed that. And then got a call from Martin Ling. He was just been pronounced manager at Torquay. Mm-hmm. Would I like to come down there and join him? We're in the league, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Our first season, which was, I think, quite a milestone for the club. We lost to Cheltenham in the playoffs in our first season. Second season didn't go so well. Certain circumstances with Martin and everything. Left there, and then was fortunate enough to go to Plymouth Argyle under Kevin Hodges in the youth department. We're there for another 4 or 5 years.
There's not a club other than Rovers and Cheltenham, there's not a club sort of in the southwest that you haven't been connected with, is there?
I think when you realise when you want to move back down to, and I'm a Plymouth boy, but we moved not obviously to Exeter, Exmouth. It was a case where we wanted to move back down to the West Country. I think I got to realise that there's only so many clubs in that area or whatever. And I think at the time then, unless an unbelievable job did come up, you're not prepared to uproot your family leave. Again.
Yeah. And, oh, Yeovil's an that. Club. You haven't managed Yeovil yet.
No. But I can't. So it was nice that I could do the job that I enjoyed doing in the area that, and I was obviously people wanted me to do it, was fine. I know, I mean, now I'm not involved as such in football, and I'm quite relaxed about that. I mean, I'm a still passionate watcher of football, or whatever. But I'm not involved in it now, and I took a step back, and I think I'm in a way. Don't miss it as much as I thought I would do. And they're not saying
What are you doing now then, Sean? How do you spend your days and your weekends?
Well, the scenario is in 2 years ago, I was at Torquay, then Gary Johnson came on board. Obviously everyone knows Gary from Bristol, whatever. And Gary Owers had left Torquay. Gary Owers, mm-hmm. manager of Torquay, asked me to be assistant. Ironically, he got the sack, whatever. And then I was asked, then would I stay on? Gary Johnson came in. He wanted me to stay there, and then which was very pleasing. Though I knew that he was going to bring other coaches in, whatever. We managed, obviously, which you're people aware that we won the Conference South.
Yeah,
and we got into the Conference 2 years ago, and then I was a situation where he brought his other staff in. Though he made me very welcome and all that, I was then. Assigned then to the 18s, which I always did enjoy and still do, but I was sort of without being unfair to Torquay, I was sort of a one-man band. I was driving the minibus. I lived in Exmouth. Yeah. I was literally on match days traveling 10 hours for an hour and a half game of football, and I was not enjoying that anymore.
You don't need it, you know. You don't. It,
yeah. No, that was the only reason I resigned myself that I didn't need it, and I was. Torquay, Gary said that there's always a job here, whatever. And I said, no, I think I don't need the hassle of like enjoying that. I enjoy the football, but not obviously the travelling and
yeah. That's when that came to an end. And you had quite a few loan players, City youngsters down there. Any stuck yes. in your mind at all over the years?
Connor, Common Lemonade, still a regular player. He's done exceptionally well there. The left footer, or trying to think who's yeah, still on the side now. Oh,
not Tommy Conway, no. Sam Pearson?
No. But like Connor was probably, I think without being rude to Torquay, he could have probably still can play in a better standard than this yeah. league. And hopefully, Torquay will prove to go up the leagues, whatever. But yeah. I mean, no, so. And then, well, what am I doing now? People realise I was a plumber, or whatever. I'm working for a care home, sort of like agency, whatever. Where Monday to Friday, 8:30 to 4:30, and my weekend's free. I managed now to go places where I couldn't go weekends.
Yeah,
lots of places where. We were obviously the only time you could go was between that May and June.
Yeah.
I would go away at Christmas. And though I say I miss on Saturday afternoon, whatever, I don't miss it as much. So I'm really, I do a general maintenance and things like that and quite enjoy it.
You do. So you put into good use your plumbing skills and general maintenance for, what is it, a care home group with a number of homes?
It's a care home group who've got houses around the area in Exmouth, in Budley, Exeter.
You're keeping...
I'm outside, still getting wet like I did today. So, yes, I still get wet, which I quite enjoy. I'm definitely not an inside person in an office and all that. I'm outdoors majority of the time. And it's, like I say, it's probably anything. It's not pressurized, whatever.
You've got a work life balance and a bit of flexibility. Before we talk about football today, generally, just to wrap up, I just want to ask you a few quick fire questions. I told you these at the start. So here we go. Who's the most skillful opponent that you've come up against in your career where you thought, bloody hell?
Well, it's got to be when I played in the Premiership, probably Peter Beardsley, I'd say. I think people ask me who the most difficult opponents were. I mean, him and Ian Wright. I mean, I would say obviously skill wise, I mean they're both very skillful, but obviously Peter Beardsley had exceptional skills. But to think about, you had Mark and Ian Wright, whose mobility and his prime at Arsenal, whatever it was. It's now you think about it, you think how did you do it, whatever. But you managed to cope with it. And like say, I could rattle all the players I've played against, like Mark Hughes and Alan Shearer, and like I mean, obviously enjoyed those battles because obviously. But then the more difficult ones, will people realise when you're taller and bigger, whatever, is the ones who get around your feet, like Peter Beardsley. And
I was going to say Beardsley and Wright. Beardsley even more so, busy, annoying.
Yes.
Then you're about 2 foot taller than they are, but they just get away. Okay,
but those experiences will always be there.
Yeah, they can't take that away from you, as they say. No. Who is the dirtiest forward that you came up against?
When I say dirtiest forward, first of all, I'll say probably the dirtiest player I've ever played against is Vinnie Jones. Without the Wimbledon days and all that. And, I mean, I don't think Einstein would work out there, whatever, but I can remember being marked for a corner. Next minute, I'm on the floor, and I don't know how I got on the floor, whatever. It was just one of those things, and it wasn't obviously, he didn't get me down there fairly, if you understand what I mean. So that was, so basically that.
But who was the one that would lay, I mean, you must have played against Fashanu, one of them.
Yeah, Fashanu. Yeah, John Fashanu, yeah. I mean, physically, I mean, I quite, being ironic, I quite enjoyed the more physicality of the you always feel like they're, like I said before, it's, so going on, I mean, Evan, you said a more difficult centre forward and more aggressive. I mean, you could get more aggressive than Alan Shearer, really. You think about
it. Yeah, he stamped when he was playing, it was against Leicester, well, for Newcastle. He stamped on somebody's head once and got away with it because it was Alan Shearer.
Quite possibly.
Was it Neil Lennon, I think? Remembering that incident. Right. Yeah, because he could put it about. And you sort of answered it to some extent because I said he was the dirtiest player. Who was the hardest defender, or rephrase it another way, when you started embarking on your playing career, who did you look at and say, actually, I want to be like him? He's resolute in his approach.
Though he's probably older than me, I mean, Tony Adams, those kind of players who obviously he's very skillful as well, but obviously very aggressive and things like that. I mean, going back to other clubs, whatever, I mean, when I was with Swindon, whatever, I mean, I did hopefully think people, I did develop into probably a very aggressive centre half, whatever, but also at times could pass the ball before I was just going to head it, if you know what I mean, whatever. So I was blessed. The experience I had at Swindon grounded me to definitely make me a better all-round footballer.
Excellent. If you look back on your whole career, we start with the negative. What was the biggest disappointment, you know, the gut-wrenching one incident or period for you?
I think, I mean, we talked about it before. I think having the cruciate injury, ironically, at Bristol, whatever, I think, I mean, if I didn't have the injury, I mean, though I was a late starter at 23, I was very fit and quite fit. And I felt like, I mean, I was fortunate to have my injuries later in my career and not at the beginning of my career. So I think on that, it was injuries that I felt that I could, I mean, I used the lad plays for now, Newport. The lad who was at Morecambe, Ellison, is it? Who's now 42.
Yeah, he came on and scored, didn't he?
That's right. And I mean, he's still, like you said, he's still fit as a fiddle, whatever. And that was easy to say, because I would still like to have played football, like beyond that. Though when I gave up football, I did ironically play for charity games and get through the games, whatever. But you'd certainly had, I had to concentrate more on those games because obviously where your body was and all things like that. So I miss. I think the injury was key for me.
If that hadn't happened, you might have gone on for another 2 years.
Yeah, I would quite confidently say that yes. And probably then, who knows what would have happened. Like I say, whether I would have gone to the depths of playing locally, I'm not sure, whatever, because it's... But then you never know. If you're still physically can do it, then you still can physically do it, I think.
Yeah. And, okay, we've gone from the low to the high. If you look at a champagne moment, what would your champagne moment or moments, you know, if you had to pick two, because you've had a good playing career, the 2 points that you look back and you think, I did that, I was there.
Right. I think, to be fair, to the three clubs I've played for, so if you don't mind, I'll give three. Yeah, so I'll give a benefit out of Exeter, Swindon and Bristol. I think Exeter winning the championship, being the captain and winning, being top of the league, whatever, and a team that I've always been, obviously, in the second or third division, whatever, winning the league by so many points, not losing at home, winning 21 and drawing 2 at home under, obviously, Terry Cooper. That was a fantastic there. And that probably was a stepping stone for me then to go to Swindon. We've already mentioned about the Swindon. To do all those, to play, to score, and end up playing where we all, as players, want to play in the Premiership. I did all that at Swindon. And to be fair to Bristol, I think, though the season was disappointing with the, but also going up the next division and having it in a winning team, whatever. That's why it's very key. It is a team game, whatever. And I think that the fans will always remark on how things went well. And I think they're probably going to be disappointed that we should have won it that league that year. But obviously finished in second at Watford.
Yeah,
was obviously
still got that's the main thing.
Yeah.
Again, big. I'm not going to say who was the most miserable git you played with or who had the worst dress sense, but if you look back on your playing career, who was the biggest joker in your career overall, and who was the biggest joker in your time at Bristol City, which might be the same person, but
The irony there is, and people, hopefully a lot of people will remember, when I first joined Exeter, there was a goalkeeper there, and I'm going to say this, he had no hair, and his name was John Shaw.
John Shaw, yeah.
And he was, now I just come into a football club, not Steve Naive, because obviously I've been a plumber and been in the trade and all that, but he used to come in with obviously his toilet bag and always have a comb in his bag. And he always said, "Do you want to borrow my comb? Do you want to borrow my comb?" Now, I don't know if he told that, but I mean, so obviously being a, because I think we signed him from Bristol, I think.
Yeah.
So I remember, I mean, that was the start of my career, whatever. And like, when I first joined Exeter, whatever, there was a lot of seasoned pros there, whatever. And like, you had to deal with that, whatever. I felt that was quite an intimidating place that first time when you went into a new change room. And I always made a point, when new players came in from that day on, from when new players come into the club and I was over there, I'd always be the first one to welcome in and say, this is a football club. Because that was a hard time, that first bit, joining someone, because you were actually taking someone else's place at a football club. I remembered it, and I made a point of always introducing and welcoming other people to the football club.
Yeah. And final question on these quickfire things. I mean, if you had to pick, you might have more, and you might say, well, it's more than three, but who are your best friends in football that you made, that you're still friends with now at this stage of your
people
life?
I think it's always, when you say got friends, I mean, the people say, oh, there was acquaintances. I mean,
yeah, loads of acquaintances, yeah.
I think, obviously, I think Gary Arrows was quite very keen on, obviously, me being obviously with him, obviously, at Forest Green in Torquay, and we still talk. Had a good relationship with Swindon lads, and obviously Martin didn't live right. Martin Ingham didn't live that very far for us in Swindon, so we had a camaraderie there, and then we had a good time when he was at Torquay, and so those things you remember really well. And like there's certain players that, though I think people realise when you're footballers, if you don't speak to them, but then we all meet like a reunions, whatever, everybody still says the same funny things and everybody gets on. That's the irony, I think, a little bit. It's always easy to say, oh, your friends are, but obviously you've got friends out of football, but with football friends, there's lots of acquaintances, but there's not many people I very, very disliked in football, to be fair.
Yeah. Let's take it back to City and a couple of general points just to wrap up. We look at City first. Nigel Pearson as manager, you've probably played against him over the years. You've seen what he's done as a manager. As a fan, you know, it's 40 years of non-Premier League football in Bristol. What you know of Nigel Pearson and what you see probably from afar, do you think he's the man that will finally do it, given the support? And he's got his physio now because there have been a lot of things about injuries there. But, you know, do you think Nigel's a good man?
I think he's a wise decision. I think everyone maybe supports, maybe a little surprised how the results have not gone that well later in the season. But obviously, he's got a pedigree. I think people, I mean, obviously, people do realise that he was mainly the fulcrum, obviously, of the Leicester, of actually the build-up of that, and then, well, say win the league, whatever. I know he didn't do that in the end, but it was sort of his majority of his team. I think people got to realise the decision there is a good decision, and I like the thing. Hopefully, that he will change things and obviously Bristol hopefully have a successful season next season.
Yeah, do you think do you ever get down there at all for games?
I haven't been down for a while, whatever, but I cannot see no reason why.
You're always a popular guy down there. And finally, football. I mean, the fans are back in the stadiums. Yes. It's made a difference, hasn't it? Even though they're only a quarter full.
Now, I've watched a few of the playoff games and even the Premiership games have played as well. And it's just a massive difference. I mean, people realise if you watch Sky, you can obviously drum into the, when you hear every word of the players, whatever, and the commentators apologise every 5 minutes for the coarse words, right? But even switching on to the crowd noise, it's not the same, but it was better. But now you see the fans with only like maybe 5,000 or... It's been a very sad situation, but hopefully we've turned for the better now.
Do you think the standard of refereeing has been... I would say, has it been better because the crowds haven't been intimidated referees, but I've felt this season, taking VAR apart, we'll come back to that as a final point, but I feel that we haven't noticed the referees so much because you haven't had the crowds squealing at them for decisions. Yes. Is that what you would say, looking at it?
But also, I think, and it's not because there's no been fans, I think the two teams have not contributed to that as well, also, if you know what I mean, because the referees, like you say, quite easy time it. So, like, as you said before, the fans have a go at the players, the players feel they got to have a go at the referee, whatever, you know what I mean? It's sort of that scenario. I think what you say is right. I mean, we're all glad now that I think the fans are back in. I just think referees have probably had an easier time now and probably will now be surprised. Now they are going to be shouted at for me because one thing is good and one thing is not so good.
And do you think, I mean, if you look at VAR, because again, we're fortunate that at Championship level and below, it's not there.
Yeah.
But if you, what you've seen of VAR from afar, how would you change it? You're never going to lose it, but what would you do differently to how they're addressing it now?
I think the scenario is a lot of it, they're so right with the goal line technology and taking it back. And all of it. I think I'm a defender here, being a defender all my career. I feel very sorry for the hairline decisions of a heel or a knee and all that for an offside decision when you only can see that, you cannot see it from a naked eye, obviously, of the linesman, whatever, but a VAR still can't get that right, whatever. I think something's got to be done on that scenario for an offside decision, because people can now celebrate goals because they're waiting for the VAR, whatever. And just on that, it's like referees now, make it easier for them to not make a decision now. They're now, if they don't see it, they can always go to VAR, so I don't think they're concentrating on the games, and they probably say they are, but they're not, because they know they've got the fallback of the AR to obviously have a look at that decision. So if we've got two linesmen, we've got the referee. Now, if the referee and linesman make that decision offside, I think we've got to adhere to it. Everybody would be happy with that. Yeah. I mean, we were still not happy when we got goal. We got the technology of offsides. And I feel very sorry. And when I say I feel very sorry, I was pleased, obviously, Leicester won the FA Cup, but how Chelsea's equaliser, because then they would have gone to extra time and things like that. It's not only a hairline decision. It's a decision on where you portray with that line.
And the speed, and ridiculous.
And another thing, the speed, obviously, someone makes a tackle and it sometimes looks a lot worse, slowed down and things like that. I mean, there's a lot of pluses for it. I mean, I totally agree. We need goal line decisions for VAR. And every goal you scored, it is legitimate. It should be a goal. Where in the past, it's not been the case. That's a classic. Now, other things, penalties and all that, it will be brought in, whatever. And I think it will be with us. We're not going to now say we're not going to have VAR. So they got it. I think we've got it here for
keeps. Well, and a very and final question: England in the Euros. Do you think we're gonna do anything? Will you be watching it?
I'll be watching, and as every England supporter who lives in England should support England, unless you're obviously Scottish and Welsh. That we all hope that we are going to win something eventually, because we have got a nucleus of exceptional good talent. This tournament.
Sean, it's been a pleasure talking to you. It's been interesting. It's been informative. It's been funny. We hope we'll see you at Ashton Gate again before too long. Let us know when you're coming up. Yeah, because I'll buy you a beer. I say it's been a real pleasure. I'm going to switch off the record button now, and then we'll just wrap up. Here we go. So, Sean Taylor, thanks for joining Forever Bristol City podcast.